Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Starting in 2021, the military released advertisements emphasizing individualism and diversity over assimilation into a cohesive force with shared martial values. The Army called this campaign a distinct departure from traditional recruiting. Yet the military's recruitment crisis has only grown worse. Generals blame increasingly overweight, over-medicated, and undereducated youth. Those factors have contributed for years, but there's an essential problem now. Young white Democrats have lost faith in their country and are rejecting military service. And military veterans no longer encourage their children to serve. The data are clear, but the Pentagon hasn't dealt with the glaring political gap. I hope they start. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine Vet Skip Coriel. Skip, talk about your new radio show. What topics do you cover? How long is it? And if our listeners would like to air it on their areas, what information should they give their local station?
Well, Colonel, it's a one-hour weekly show. It's called the Home Defense Show. As far as is it going to be in their area, they can just go to homedefenseshow.com and they'll be able to find out if it's in their area. If it's not in your area and you want it in your area, well, hey, then just go ahead and call your station manager and say, hey, I want the Home Defense Show by Skip Coriel. And then they'll be able to find it with no problem.
Sounds good, because I think your show is something that, particularly as dangerous as the world's getting today, is something that more citizens need to hear. Just my thought.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Colonel. And Colonel, isn't this weekend Marilyn and your wedding anniversary?
It is, dude. 57 years in a row. I'm surprised she's still putting up with me, but I'm very grateful. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss why our constitutional republic is also a theocracy. Yes, we were founded as one nation under God. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. General Arnold Panero will join us to discuss our nation's challenges, specifically Israel. Then West Point grad Dr. John Hughes will present the MacArthur Society, West Point grads who want to return to their former high standards. Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And Diane Raver will discuss the movie of the month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. And we'll start with the news, of course. Take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, it's been 50 days since the October 7 massacre. As Israelis continue to grieve, they pray for the 239 men, women, children, and elderly who are still held captive in a gross violation of our shared humanity and of international law. As Israel presses further into Gaza to root out Hamas, the terror group's total disregard for Palestinian civilians, including patients, is being exposed for the world to see. A week ago, the IDF conducted a targeted operation against Hamas terrorists in the Shifa Hospital, the largest medical complex in Gaza City. Israeli and American intelligence have each confirmed that the hospital is being used by Hamas to hide its weapons and fighters. In the hospital, they found terrorist grab-and-go bags filled with rifles, ammunition, grenades, and Hamas uniforms hidden behind MRI machines. Medical cabinets lining the hallways were stocked with military vests, AK-47s, knives, and other Hamas tactical gear ready for terrorists to use against Israelis. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. Hamas spent 16 years building and fortifying its labyrinth of tunnels beneath the complex. There are reportedly hundreds of Palestinians being treated in the hospital and over 1,000 internally displaced Gazans inside. None have been killed as Israel targets the terrorists and takes unparalleled measures to protect civilians. While the IDF fights Hamas, it is simultaneously delivering humanitarian aid to civilians inside the hospital. Israeli medical teams and Arabic-speaking soldiers are on the ground ensuring that all medical and humanitarian supplies successfully reach those in need. Inexplicably, the BBC reported that Israel was firing at doctors and Arabic speakers, later forced to correct the record that Israel was providing doctors and Arabic speakers for the hospital.
No surprise here. The Jews are acting like the honorable human beings that they are, helping those in need and seeking to kill only those who want to kill them. Hamas is a bunch of evil liars who want only to murder others.
And earlier this month, Capitol Police battled protesters outside Democratic Party headquarters in a violent demonstration that ended with one arrest and a lockdown of House offices. The protesters were chanting for a ceasefire in Gaza.
Let's see. The people who were at the demonstration at our Capitol on January 6th were peaceful and are considered threats to our nation's survival. I wonder if any of these violent people are a similar threat to our FBI, I mean.
And Christians in China, who have faced constant persecution by the Communist Party, have been meeting in underground churches for years since the state officially prohibited all churches outside the state-controlled three self-patriotic movement churches. Those who refuse to attend the state church continue to meet in their homes and at other venues. In July, China's new anti-espionage law defined illegal religious activities as espionage, and foreign nationals can face lengthy jail terms under the new law.
Yes, we certainly want a nice, friendly relationship with China. Not. The Chinese leadership is as evil as one can get. Okay, they're tied with the Iran and terrorist leaders.
And Communist China is attacking us. They have been exploiting Maine's lax marijuana state laws and our federal government's failure to enforce U.S. federal immigration laws in Maine or on our wide-open southern border. Over 100 properties and 270 individual sites in rural Maine have been purchased by Chinese in the last 2.5 years. According to an unclassified memo from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, illicit marijuana growing operations are now underway and under the control of communist Chinese transnational criminal organizations. The DEA should have terminated those unlicensed and illicit marijuana growing operations years ago and arrested the operators. The DEA was obviously prevented from doing so. According to that DHS memo, Chinese communist foreign nationals operate the sites, some of whom are in the U.S. illegally and cannot even speak English. The DHS memo stated, they believe the marijuana growing network earns an estimated income of $4.37 billion per year, some of which is returned to entities in communist China.
We are indeed under attack from China. China is smart enough to take advantage of our incompetent federal government. This is not only supporting illegal drug use in our nation, it's helping finance the Chinese communist government in China. This is consistent with China's assistance for the fentanyl that's coming across our southern border.
And Ukraine's Marine Corps said it has secured multiple bridgeheads on the eastern bank of the Dnieper River in the Kherson region in fighting it described as having left nearly 3,500 Russians killed or wounded and dozens of ammunition depots, tanks, armored vehicles, and other weaponry destroyed. The Marine Infantry Command's claims are the first to come directly from the Ukrainian military about advances across one of Russia's most significant strategic barriers. Their president's office has confirmed for the first time that Ukraine had established a foothold on the eastern side of the river. The wide river is a natural dividing line along the southern battlefront, and Moscow's forces have used it since leaving the area around the city of Kherson in November 2022 to prevent Ukrainian troops from advancing further toward Russian-annexed Crimea. Western officials with knowledge of intelligence, speaking on condition of anonymity, said that Ukraine has portions of three brigades across the river and was expected to make small gains as Russians have so far been unable to repel them. Quote, the Ukrainians have seen an opportunity there and taken it, one official said. What we've not seen is the Russians being able to push them back from that position, unquote.
I'm glad the Ukrainians are fighting and winning. I don't feel that we need to be their major supporter anymore. Europe can and should do that. We need to get our own nation's finances under control. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. I encourage you to check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some more wisdom. Then we'll talk with General Arnold Panero. At ease, troops, take a break.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correll with your home defense tip of the week. One item you should keep in your bedroom at all times is a military-grade high-lumen flashlight. I've raised four teenagers, and I've learned that just because someone's sneaking in your window at 2 a.m. doesn't mean you want to shoot them. That bright flashlight will immediately blind the invader and readily identify whether they are friend or foe. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. I think most citizens know that we live in a constitutional republic. Well, it's also a theocracy, the pledge of allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, with liberty and justice for all. Indeed, Congressman like Mike Johnson recently opened his tenure as Speaker of the House with a speech citing the Creator God mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. The speech drew criticism from all the liberal media, of course. Much of the criticism shifted between Johnson's support for Trump, his church affiliation, and his tendency to use biblical language. They all jumped on the accusation that Johnson is a Christian nationalist. Yet none offered any rebuttal of the fact that our Declaration of Independence actually does reference God in the course of justifying America's separation from the British. Our Declaration, in fact, makes four references to God using the terminology of the 18th century. The first reference is in the opening paragraph that appeals to, quote, the laws of nature and of nature's God, end quote, thus grounding the legitimacy of the new 13 United States of America in natural law and its divine author. It was intended that our nation would seek to conform to God's moral order from its inception. And yes, it was the Christian God that they were referring to. Next, in the first sentence of the next paragraph is the most famous, quote, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, end quote. Securing these rights accurately expresses the American understanding of government's purpose. Government derives its just powers from the consent of the governed. But both government and the people are subordinate to the Creator, who stands outside the material world and brought all things into existence. Thomas Jefferson and the Second Continental Congress presumed a common, though not mandated, belief in God. Without God, the fight for independence was unjust. Without God, the new nation had no duty to protect life and liberty. Without God, the people's right to pursue happiness, understood by the founders as the classical pursuit of goodness and virtue, would deserve no mention. Without God, the Declaration's claims are meaningless because the very concepts of justice, goodness, and truth are subject to constant redefinition based on the whims of the moment. The understanding of God-given rights is why another body of representatives enshrined religious liberty in the Constitution. Some things belong only to humanity's Creator and must remain untouched by human officials. America's limited government might assert faith in God, but it would not trample on conscience or force belief. Yes, even those citizens who deny the existence of God deserve life, civil liberty, and religious freedom. The Declaration then mentions its specific condemnations of Britain's monarch, explaining how the king violated the laws of nature and nature's God and the liberties granted by the Creator. The concluding paragraph then makes a logical shift between the two final references. It opens with the references appeal to, quote, the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, end quote. This asked God to judge not only their words, but their motives. Using the Enlightenment framework, Congress was arguing that virtuous citizens, using their reason, could achieve victory by acting in accordance with the moral framework of the universe. The closing sentence reiterates this belief in God as the cosmic judge. Congress pledges its, quote, firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, end quote, knowing that if they are proven wrong, they will lose their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor. This sense of humanity as being created in the language of God prompted Jefferson to fear God's wrath on a country that still allowed human beings to enslave one another, for liberty is, quote, the gift of God. Jefferson, a man deeply troubled by his own guilt in perpetuating slavery, wrote, quote, indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever, end quote. For the record, as we were beginning to resist in the Revolutionary War, we needed our Declaration of Independence to be agreed to by all the states, and the draft that included eliminating slavery would not be agreed to by at least two of the southern states, and we needed to be in agreement as we declared war on Britain, the most powerful nation in the world. So the banning of slavery was left out. So why does exploring the founders' reliance on God and the Declaration matter today? Because it is the most fundamental matter in the root of every political question. Why are humans equal? Because God created them so. Why can government not solve every problem? Because it's not God. Why can our officials wage war or kill criminals? Because God delegated authority to civil government to punish evil and promote good. Why is governmental power limited in society, and why must it protect human liberty? Because God distributed power to other human institutions, such as the family and the church, and every human being has a unique soul. In dealing with how to include God in our government, for the authors of the Declaration of Independence, they moved beyond the narrow set of religious practices or beliefs. Individual founders differed in their doctrines, and yet they unanimously advocated for a theistic republic. It was built on the premise that a good God not only created the world, but demanded justice, liberty, and equality from those who govern it. Remove its foundation, and a republic such as this is doomed to fracture and collapse. Our nation has drifted quite far from those important founding values. It's time for all of us to stand up and start moving our nation, our government, our schools, and our lives back in line with our founding principles. May God continue to bless America. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom, and now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Well, it's Thanksgiving weekend, and it's all about turkey, stuffing, family, friends, and of course, football. And while conventional wisdom dates the first Thanksgiving back to 1621, when pilgrims in Plymouth marked a successful harvest with a feast to which they invited Native Americans, it wasn't a celebration that continued from year to year. In fact, Thanksgiving didn't really become any kind of a tradition until we were trying to unify the nation during two of our biggest early struggles, the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. The first recognition of a nationally celebrated holiday of Thanksgiving came in a proclamation by the Second Continental Congress in 1777, a year after it signed the Declaration of Independence. And it came as our young country's future was far from certain. In fact, it was issued from a temporary meeting site because the national capital, which was in Philadelphia at the time, was occupied by British forces. The language was marked by its central theme of gratitude for American forces' successes. It then disappeared for many years until James Madison brought it back in 1814 to issue thanks for Americans' fortunes and yet another time of public calamity and war, this time the War of 1812. And just like the proclamation of four decades earlier, Madison also gave thanks for the victories of our military. However, Thanksgiving Day did not become an annually observed national celebration until 1863, when Abraham Lincoln issued his own proclamation. And like his predecessors, this too was written in the context of a conflict, but this was during the Civil War, which threatened the very viability of the United States as a sovereign and unified nation. So while we enjoy this weekend's Thanksgiving traditions, we should take note of the ways in which the wars that we have fought have shaped our nation, not only politically, but culturally and as a society. We celebrate it annually as a nation, a unifying tradition from the conflicts that have defined our history. So there's perhaps no better day on which to reflect on the enormous important impact of our nation's wars, past, present, and unfortunately, in the future. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I enjoy your comments. I really do. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss our nation's challenges with General Arnold Panero. Then we'll talk about West Point's upset graduates with Dr. John Hughes. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some boxing. Box three rounds, take a break, box another three, then stand at ease.
From ensuring veterans get the care they deserve, to ending our nation's endless wars, to targeting out-of-control spending, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing America.
You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit CVAFrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. So it's an honor to welcome back to the show retired Marine General Arnold Panero. Like I was, he commanded a rifle platoon in Vietnam and served a full career in both active and reserve capacities. He also served as a senior staffer in the Senate Armed Forces Committee, and he's now a consultant. So welcome back to the show, Arnold. I'm glad you could join us.
Denny, privileged to be here.
Arnold, start by giving us a quick review of your time in uniform.
Well, Denny, like you, I had the privilege as a volunteer to serve in Vietnam as an infantry platoon commander and then stayed in the reserves thanks to the good advice from then Chief of Staff, the Army General Creighton Abrams, who said, Arnold, the Guard and Reserve are going to be really important in the future. We're never going to go to a war again without them, which we didn't do in Vietnam. And that was one of the big problems because the draft was so unpopular. So I stayed in, mainly in the infantry side of the Marine Corps, and was privileged to rise up through the ranks and ended up commanding general of the 4th Marine Division at one point in my career.
Yes, sir. And talk about your time in Senate.
Well, I also was fortunate coming out of the graduate school at the University of Georgia to get on the staff of U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, who went on to serve with great distinction, including as chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. And I was his staff director for 14 years. So for almost 24 years, I was involved in every key national security, intelligence, confirmation decision in the Congress in that period, and then went into the defense industry following that.
Okay, so it's fair to say you've looked at the military culture and structure from about every direction there is to look at, huh?
Yeah, and I was also involved in the major legendary rewrite of the chain of command, the Goldwater-Nichols reform in 86. And so very familiar with, you know, what's in place today and what the additional changes that are needed.
Okay. Well, as we look at the challenges today, to me, it's pretty clear that the Israel situation, Israel fighting Hamas, will they also start fighting on the West Bank? Probably what we've got going on in Syria that's causing the terrorists over there to be fighting us. The fact that we have basically run out or close to running out of our military supplies, ammunition, that kind of thing that we need for combat, that we'd given so much to Ukraine, and now we need to give to Israel. And if China goes after Taiwan, which I'm guessing they will now, because it's pretty obvious we're weak, we'd need to give to them and our southern border. Wow. Is it fair to say that this is a mess?
Well, Denny, it's fair to say that the world's in flames. There's no getting around it. We've got a major war in Europe. We've got a major war in the Middle East. And frankly, the evil puppet master, Iran, we're on the verge of it escalating into a three-front war. And then we've got serious concerns about China's rise in the Far East and their designs on Taiwan. And all of this points to a couple of really key things. One, deterrence is incredibly important. Nuclear deterrence more than ever, because Russia and China are strengthening their nuclear capacity. Fortunately, on that front, we've got all the major modernizations of the bomber, the ICBM leg, and the submarine leg, as well as the command and control underway. But our conventional deterrence is lacking. We certainly do not have the industrial capacity to basically deal with the current situations that we have. We weren't even producing sufficient equipment and munitions and stockpiles to be able to implement our own contingency plans, much less provide the support that's absolutely essential in Ukraine and absolutely essential for Israel. I mean, we need to go back to being the arsenal of democracy like we were in World War II, and that's going to take considerable effort. So all of these things are important, and deterrence at the conventional level, deterring China from going to Taiwan, deterring Iran from escalating this into a three-front war, we need to be a lot stronger on all those fronts. Over.
Yes, we do. And you mentioned the nuclear threat. clearly Iran is incredibly hostile towards Israel, and both Iran and Israel have nukes. That's another dimension that we need to look at or be concerned about or figure out how we deal with.
We do. And I don't know. Certainly, Iran wants to have a nuclear weapon. Certainly, they are well beyond 95% enrichment of the nuclear materials that they would need. We have not been sufficiently focused on that in recent years. We need to do more. I mean, the nuclear deterrence against Russia and China works because they don't want their country totally obliterated, because they know that was what would happen if they started a nuclear war. With Iran, these people, the Ayatollahs, you know, they've been on a march against Western democracy and against Israel for decades. You know, we're past the 40-year anniversary of the Beirut bombing, which was fomented by Iran. So the last people in the world you would ever want to have in their clutches a nuclear weapon, it would be the Ayatollahs in Iran. And so I hope they don't have one, but they're awful close. And we should make sure, working with our allies and partners, whatever it takes, to make sure they never get one in their hands.
Here's hoping. We'll find out when and if. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking with General Arnold Panera. And Iran's hatred for Israel, exactly at the time that the Iranians took over the U.S. embassy in Iran, their leader referred to the United States as the great Satan and Israel as the little Satan. So they can be looking at taking us on somehow, too. The question is how, though all the people coming across our southern border could be part of that. It's a mess. Everything is.
Iran is the world's largest exporter of terrorism. There's no getting around it. They would like to wipe out Israel off the face of the earth, and including all the Jews. They certainly don't have any love for the United States of America, would do anything. They work through their proxies in Syria and Iraq and attacking our forces there now. We have not been sufficiently strong in terms of our retaliation to teach them a lesson. Not only do we want to deter China vis-a-vis Taiwan, we want to deter Iran from expanding and continuing to export terrorism, not just in the Middle East, but also towards our borders as well, as you mentioned.
Yes, sir. Right now, we do not have any combat troops. We may be probably advisors and a few other things, but no combat troops in Israel working with the Israelis. And apparently they have not asked for any. Is there a likelihood that we're going to get involved in that with combat forces?
I don't believe we're going to get involved with boots on the ground in Israel or in Gaza. We certainly need to be providing them with intelligence. We need to be providing them with advice. We need to be providing them with the implements and the weapons of war. Certainly, our hostage rescue experts are out in the region. Denny, you and I know that. We don't want to talk about the specifics, but U.S. forces are ready to go in at great risk to themselves to get our American hostages that Hamas has out. So, and we've got two carrier battle groups. We've got an amphibious ready group in the region. So we don't have boots on the ground, but we've got a heck of a lot of combat capability ready to pounce when needed.
Yes, sir. And Hamas, which was asked by the people of Gaza to be their ruler. So Gaza really is a state, an area with a ruler that they picked, who certainly hates Israel because they're committed to their total death. But the West Bank with Hezbollah over there, that's a threat too, that could pop
that's
at
right.
any time.
There have been a lot of uprisings with the Palestinian settlements on the West Bank. We also have Hezbollah in Lebanon, which has got great range. They've improved their capability thanks to Iran over the years. They've got missiles that could range Tel Aviv and deep into Israel. Certainly, we would not want to see them open a northern front vis-a-vis Israel. That would really stretch the Israeli forces then. Being on the ground and trying to root out Hamas in a key urban area like Gaza is already hard enough. I mean, the Clausewitz, the great military thinker and writer, talked about how combat and built-up areas was the most difficult of all military endeavors, and it always favors the defender. So Hamas is favored because they have the upper hand because of just how difficult it is. And so the last thing we need, and the only way we're going to keep Hezbollah from jumping in there, is if we basically tell Iran, if you basically push Hezbollah to open that northern front, we're going to take it to you on your territory, your oil refineries, your leadership, your command and control. We've got to be very emphatic with Iran about the downside consequences if they escalate the war.
That's a really good point, because left to themselves, they're going to wait till Israel is even more committed and they're going to hit again. So that's one thing we can do without being involved in the fight. We can certainly manage the pressure we put on Iran, and we certainly have the forces over there. That was a good move putting them over there.
Yeah, no, they're doing all the right things. But the other one that, Denny, we should be worried about is Putin is patient. I mean, he's willing to wait out Ukraine, thinking the West is going to get weak knees and cold shoulder and pull out over time. And you're already seeing some of that happening in some of our country and some of the Western democracies. So the worst thing that could happen would be for Putin to be successful in Ukraine. Then he's going to be tying up his boots and marching west towards some of the NATO countries. And then Article 5 kicks in. So anybody that thinks that Putin would stop at the Ukrainian borders is just delusional.
Well said, sir. And there's more to discuss about these challenges, and General Panero is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, usually, every week. Then take a break to stay in the area. We'll be right back.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with General Arnold Panero. Arnold, you were just commenting about Ukraine. Ukraine seems to be doing pretty well right now. Russia doesn't seem to be doing very well, but that doesn't mean that Russia's giving up or doesn't plan to win that thing and push it as hard as they can. On the other hand, I am surprised at how poorly their military, their ground military anyway, seems to be doing.
Well, Denny, first of all, the reason Ukraine is doing well is because the incredible bravery and fighting spirit of their armed forces and their civilian population. Their civilian population is suffering immensely. Russia, like Hamas, has targeted civilians, women, children, schools, hospitals, paying no attention to the laws of armed conflicts and, you know, reducing some cities to just total rubble. And the problem with Ukraine has is they didn't have the implements of war. We've been providing that. The administration continues to basically support, and Congress, I think, on a bipartisan basis, will continue to support. Putin is there. He wants to wait the West out. He doesn't care how many casualties he has. He doesn't care that his military is not performing the way it should be. I think he thought he was going to go in there and the war would be over in a couple of days. That's just not the case. You know, they're fighting and dying for inches in the war right now. And the West has got to stick with Ukraine and ensure that Putin is not successful. If Putin was successful in Ukraine, it not only would basically put the Western NATO borders at risk, it also would tell Iran, China, and North Korea, you don't have to worry about the United States and NATO. They don't have the ability to stick with it. And so we can go do whatever we want in the Middle East. We can take Taiwan. We can charge into South Korea. It would be an absolute terrible message for the world to send, the Western democracies to send. You know, if you think the world's in flames now, if we were to allow Putin to succeed in Russia, you're talking about other parts of the world in a conflagration that we haven't seen even in World War II.
I totally agree with you on that, Arnold. That's absolutely true. But one of the things that surprises me is your point's well taken, that I don't believe and never did believe that Russia would stop at Ukraine. But why aren't the other NATO, Western European countries pouring more support into them? Why are they sitting back and letting us do much of it? There are some countries.
Denny, it's a mixed bag there. Some of the countries like Poland has been incredibly supportive, has allowed tens of thousands of Ukrainians to come into their country. They didn't want to start refugee camps. They're putting them up in their homes. They're providing medical. They're providing food. Poland and a couple of the others. But frankly, the country that's in the best position to do more is Germany, and they're a piker when it comes to what they're doing. They've got the strongest economy in Western Europe. They claim they're going to rebuild their military, but they've played kissy face with Russia and China too much in recent years. And so there's a couple of NATO countries like Germany where we ought to light the Bunsen burner under them and say they've got to do a lot more.
I agree. And that's just one of the many things that need to be done. I have read enough to know that there's a lot of both Hamas and Hezbollah camps in Mexico, somewhat south of our border. Even if there's just a couple, clearly they are in good contact with the bad guys who actually control the Mexico's border. We've got to be having some problems with all the people we're letting in right now. I mean, they're not all Mexican nationals.
Yeah, Denny, country can't be secure if we can't secure our own borders, whether it's for illegal people coming in or if it's from drugs or things that we don't want in this country. So clearly, those people that are saying, okay, we're going to provide some supplemental money for Ukraine and Israel and also beef up Taiwan, but let's beef up the U.S. border. So I'm encouraged by the people in Congress that are saying we're going to add that to the supplemental and use the fact that the administration really is anxious to get the Ukraine and Israel money to leverage getting additional capability on the border. So that's long overdue. I was never a big fan of walls. The Maginot Line didn't keep people out. Fortifications don't keep people out. The Israeli border wall didn't keep Hamas out. So it's not about building walls. It's about basically having the capability with technology and policies to basically keep people from ever wanting to cross that border illegally to start with or bring illegal substances into our country.
I agree. You can do a lot of things, but if you don't have the attitude that we are going to have a secure border, we're not going to let anybody in, we're going to enforce the law, we're going to tell our law enforcement people to enforce the law, it doesn't make a difference what you have down there.
I totally agree.
What do you see is the right move for us now? Obviously, we want to support Israel. We've got forces in the Mideast. We're continuing to support Ukraine. In none of these cases do we see ourselves committing armed forces, but we could. And certainly if Taiwan is invaded, we want to support them, but probably not with troops.
So, Denny, in terms of Taiwan, I would significantly beef up the deterrence. War is the worst thing. You and I know we've been in a war. Nobody that's ever served in the military wants war. And you know, so you want to deter war. And so we want to deter China from ever starting anything in Taiwan so we don't ever have to cross that bridge. And the deterrence would be giving Taiwan additional offensive capability to strike first China ever starts stirring the pot. And that means longer range missiles. That means additional capabilities on the ground in Taiwan. And so the key right now is deterrence, is beefing up deterrence. And we should also be increasing our own force structure in the Pacific, just like we moved carrier battle groups into the Middle East and the amphibious ready group. We roughly have the same force structure in the Pacific we had 10, 15 years ago, which is not sufficient for the threat that we face out there now. And having those capabilities in the region also enhances deterrence. So to me, the key is basically doing what we need to do to beef up deterrence. That includes increasing our capability to build the munitions and weapons that we would need, that we would want to give to Taiwan. All of those things add to deterrence. So the last thing you want to do is get in a shooting war. Nobody wins in a shooting war. And we want to deter that war to start with from the get-go.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Arnold Panaro. General, so we've identified the fact that there's a pretty good mess out there. What should our listeners, as good citizens, do? We need to communicate with our elected officials, senators and Congress critters.
I think, Denny, what's our push? Is people to be well-informed on what's going on and not basically go to outlets that deal in fake news or deal in one side of the news. There are not a lot of places you can go these days to get objective information, but we need people to be objectively informed. Then they need to reach out to their elected leaders at all things and make their viewpoints known, whatever that viewpoint may be. No one's going to be in 100% agreement, but our democracy only works if the American people are well-informed and engaged with their elected leaders.
Well, I'm sure you saw that when you were working in the Senate. I've often said elected people have one major weakness. They can't read minds. They don't know what you want. You have to communicate with them.
And they're very responsive to the people. I mean, people maybe don't realize the juice and the clout they have, particularly at the ballot box. So people need to be informed on an objective basis, and they need to engage with their elected leaders.
Which means paying attention to what those elected leaders are saying and doing and communicating periodically, saying, I appreciate how you did that, or I wish you hadn't done this, or please do this in the future. That's the kind of communication I'm talking about. I sent them a letter once. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. And then they also need to know, you know, who they ought to be listening to. There are many thoughtful, objective leaders that you know, you could listen to these days in both parties. Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin on China, Tom Cotton from Arkansas, even in Alyssa Slotkin in Michigan, Jack Bergman in Michigan. And these are people from different parties. And so, you know, you can't just listen to one side of the aisle. There's some really thoughtful people out there that the American people ought to be listening to.
I really agree with you. And one of the things that I think is one of our major weaknesses is most of us right now are on one side or the other, and we totally disregard the other side. And the great strength of America is diversity, which means diversity of thought. That I, even if I disagree with you, I listen to you so that I at least understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, Denny, none of the problems we face in the world, whether it's reforming our entitlements and runaway federal spending, whether it's national security, none of that can be solved by one side or the other. It takes a bipartisan approach. It takes people compromising and meeting in the middle. Our history shows that the notion that somehow, you know, one side or the other can solve all these difficult problems, it just won't happen. I mean, it's just a fact of life. It won't happen.
Yes, indeed. Arnold, thank you. Thank you for sharing your comments and your insights today. Thank you for being a good friend. Thank you for your service to our nation, and especially now. I appreciate you, bro.
Same here. Back at you, Denny.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Dr. John Hughes about West Point's MacArthur Society. Then Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival will review the movie of the month. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones. Grab some protein. Rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.